This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two amazing people, James Hahn, friend of the podcast, and contributor to the weekly pull list, I think, starting this week, and Nick White, comic book contributor. Thank you guys for joining me this week. I'm so excited that we're back after our week delay, I should say, or week off or something, so that Xander could get his sanity back. How are you guys doing, and how have comic books been? James?
Well, comics are always a problem for me. You guys just hit, before we started this podcast, I went and pulled up my big stack to see exactly how many comics I've bought so far, and in the past 2 weeks, I've bought 30 comic books.
Whoa.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and that's after I stopped buying trades as well. So
that's almost one comic book for every day this month. Oh
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a problem.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
This is
Nick, how about you?
This is Addictions Weekly, and we're
Hi,
here
my name
to
is
actually
Mike,
have
and I'm an alcoholic.
A
wait.
What do they call those? We're here to have an intervention for James.
Yes. Yeah. A digital intervention.
A digivent.
That's
where
the future is
digivention.
That sounds like a Digimon convention for some reason.
Digivention, go! Digivolve into uncontrollable collecting and hoarding. Look, he's evolving! Oh no!
Nick is going to actually reenact the audio for the entire season of Digimon.
Digimon,
one.
Digital monsters, Digimon are the champions. Digivolve!
Oh my gosh, how have comic books been for you, man?
Well, judging from the fact that I rattled that off pretty quick, you can tell my life is in ruins. Digivolve into sadness. Comics have been good. Other than that, things have been real fun, because I was at the doctor on Friday, and they seem to think that I may or may not be allergic to gluten or dairy, and so they prescribed a diet of attempting to stay away from both, at which point I suggested that we just find a way to just euthanize me within the hospital confines and just call it good at that point.
So now you get to be one of those people that says, does this have gluten in it?
Yeah, I get to be one of those D-bags, and I'll tell you what, like, I don't even understand how the people who are, like, hardcore serious about it even... I was at Culver's last night, which, I mean, you're thinking, Nick, Culver's, like, what are you setting yourself up for? Do you even remember
yeah,
what
exactly.
they prescribed? I mean, you're fucking moron. It's out of Wisconsin. The whole thing is cheese and wheat. And just fucking idiot. But I remember that they had gluten-free buns, so I was like, okay, I can do that. That'll work. But then I had to go through this whole thing with the lady where she's like, so you want the combo? And I'm like, yes, but I don't want the cheese. So you want the hamburger combo? Right, but there's not a combo for that. There's a combo with the cheeseburger, and I want you to give me that, and then I want you to take the cheese off. Okay, so what are we going to do about the fries? Well, fries are made from potatoes, so I think I'm going to be fine. Well... hold on, and then she goes back and she gets the manager, and there's like three people behind me at this point, and he comes out, and he's got that look that, like, he's expecting me to really, really throw a fit or something, and of course, I don't want to have any sort of issue, and he's like, well, I want to let you know that our fries are, cooked in the same area as other things that have gluten in them, so there's a chance of cross-contamination. I'm just like, I just fucking want fries, okay? I mean, unless you're, like, I don't know, you know, sprinkling in some strychnine in your free time, like, I'm gonna be fine. And so he's like, well, we just wanted to make sure you understood the implications, sir. I'm just trying to fucking eat dinner. I just want dinner!
So what you're saying is that, since Friday, things have been going really well.
Oh, my God. Things have been going great. The comics are fine. You know, you gotta live for something, right?
Yeah, so how
yes.
about them comics,
yes.
guys? Right?
How about them comics?
Oh, man. As long as they're gluten-free.
Oh, my God. Have you? Oh my god. Okay, well, I'm sorry.
Can't wait to go into my shop. Are these gluten-free comics?
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, Nick. I'm sorry that you have to live this life.
Yeah, well,
or at least,
you know,
potentially live it to determine if that's what's ailing you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, the worst part is, like, seemingly I am sort of feeling better already, which is not great. I mean, I know that that's such a really weird, emotionally complicated predicament, but I wish I was feeling, like, worse, because then, of course, I can say, well, you know, it's not that, so I'm just going to go back and eat cheese and fuck you. I have a feeling it's not dairy, though, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, anyway. So comics have been good.
Comics have been good. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Well, comics have been good for me. I think we can all have a general consensus that every week, usually, comics are pretty good. Which begs the question, what have you been reading lately? Because it's been 2 weeks, and I have only read, like, six comics, like, in 2 weeks, which is, like, almost, like, I'm almost, like, disgusted with myself, mostly because I have so many comics now sitting in the backlog that I need to read that are just regular weekly books. Like, I'm sitting on, like, a potentially 17 digital books and probably another 12 or 15 physical books from just backlogs from previous weeks, and it's all just piling up. And now I have that stress of, what do I do? Do I binge in a week, or do I, like, just say, well, I'm done with this series and just stop reading? Because I've done that before, where I've had, like, so many books in the backlog that I'm just like, there's no way I'm ever catching up to this. And I just say, I got to cancel the pull for this book and catch up, and then maybe somehow get the rest. Because, like, I'm buying these books and I'm not reading them, but I don't know. Nick, what have you been reading? I'm just going to throw this back to you. What have you been reading that's been distracting you from this horrible, horrible gluten-free life that you're living?
Oh, gluten-free, man.
Gluten-free, dairy-free life.
Ugh, yeah, right? I actually got through a lot of things, which is what happens when you need distractions in your life from other stuff. And right. I got through Wool. I finished that, which was that Palmiotti Gray adaptation of that book. I mean, we've talked about this before. Who actually reads prose anymore? I mean, turn it into an audiobook, yeah, or turn it into a movie, or do something that
they're
does...
turning graphic novels into audiobooks now. Lock and Key on Audible.
Oh,
you can get
goodness.
That. So now you don't even need to read comic books anymore, guys.
Not Lock and Key, no.
Which is weird, because, like, with something like that, you're like, how is this going to be successfully adapted? It's fascinating.
I've heard that it's really good, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think about it, comic books are largely conversationally driven as opposed to prose, or they certainly are more conversationally driven now than they used to be. So I'm sure they read... They might adapt to an audio play better than most prose books, to be honest.
Yeah, potentially.
So I read that. That was kind of interesting. It was sort of a combination of, I guess you could say it's like Fallout and a couple other sort of post-apocalyptic-esque scenarios. The whole basic, you know, conceit of what if we're being told to stay inside these areas and the world outside is, you know, a wasteland and, it's uninhabitable, and if you go outside, you die, and what if it's a massive conspiracy and things are actually, well, not great, but they're certainly not going to kill you. So that was good. I read Omega Men 5. That book continues to be really interesting and, as I've said before, fascinating in a way that it does not care about making certain that you're on the same page or that you understand everything. And it's a book that totally embraces the idea of there being mysteries and unanswered questions. And for a DC book, it's fascinating to have something that isn't totally hand-holding. Grayson 12 was interesting. Gotham by Midnight, I got around to reading another issue of that. Mixed feelings on that. I'm not totally upset that book is coming to an end. I just hope that DC finds a way to keep Juan Ferreira around on art, or they assign him to something else if they can.
Mm-hmm.
But probably the two biggest reads I read this week were, and you're going to love this, Mike. I was at Barnes earlier this week, and it came down to me picking up, I don't think I told you this, so I'm hoping to get your reaction live here, because I think you're going to, well, we'll see what you think. It came down to Chrononauts Volume 1 and Injection Volume 1, and I picked up Chrononauts. Yep. I can tell you're all right with that.
I...
Which... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just gonna let you just do whatever you want with your life now. You know,
after this decision, all bets are off.
You're gonna make, then I guess we're done. You're done getting advice from me.
Oh man. And you know, it's Sean Murphy's art, which is just absolutely beautiful.
I was gonna say, no, Sean Murphy's art, I can totally understand that. Yeah. I can totally understand getting
and
that.
They really should just retitle the book Time Bros. I think Time Bros would work amazingly. because it really is Time Bros or Time Bras. Hats off to Sean Murphy. He, like, there are so many times where he just draws, like, literally a throwaway panel of, like, one era of, like, the Romans or, like, the 1920s, and, like, you never revisit that era, but he has to spend all this time getting all these costumes and, you know, outfits and everything right for that exact panel and era of time, and then that's it.
Right.
And that's all he uses it for. There are pages where it's, like, six or seven different time eras that you never see again, and yet he draws this in such painstaking detail. It's really fun. In a way, it's sort of like the polar opposite of what Black Science was, where Black Science was like, oh my gosh, science is really evil and it's a mistake and I'm haunted by all these morally ethical science decisions I've had to make and I'm gonna share all of these problems with you and this book is not fun. And this is like, oh man, high five, let's go through time and have sex with as many people as possible.
Right. This is Mark Miller, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's Mark Miller, and I think Sean Murphy's art keeps it from ever reaching any sort of a truly dark or messed up place. It's just, it's really, you know, it's Mark Millar's, I guess, male wish fulfillment fantasy, you know, running free again, if you want to call it
and
that.
And more than likely being optioned for a movie as we speak. Because nowadays.
This has movie written all over it. 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But like I said, it is fun. If not really the smartest, you know, this guy's like, I'm the perfect character. I go through time, and he has a board of like all of the women in each era, so he can remember what their likes and dislikes are. It's kind of goofy.
Oh Jesus!
And he is of course having sex with Marilyn Monroe, although they semi cleverly use her like real name instead of you know Marilyn Monroe. So if you're able to connect the dots, you figure it out, and if you don't, you don't. But It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, and mixed feelings, but fun. And the other thing I've really been reading is I've been plowing through the original Star Wars comics, and I was just plowing through it this weekend because I was trying to get past the point where they're merely adapting the first movie, you know?
Right.
And then get into the issues where the writers are like, well, fuck, like, we don't know where Lucas is actually, I mean... I say we don't know, but clearly from what they're writing, they had no idea where Lucas was going to go with the next couple movies. So they're like inventing all of these fucking species that like never exist, and they're like putting banthas on planets where banthas clearly aren't supposed to live, and they're creating like droid human hybrids, and it's hilarious because they have no idea where these things are going, and they have Luke and Leia kissing way too much. It's just. I mean,
this explains Han's look in Return of the Jedi, right? Like, even more so than just the one time that they kissed on screen. Instead, it was like, I heard all these stories about you guys making out, and oh my god. And when Leia's like, he's my brother, and he's like, oh god, you guys are just a really close family, right? Like, that's all that happens in that look that he gives her at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Like, when like, you know, Darth Vader is talking about him having a sister, like, just smash cut to him putting Darth Vader on the burning pyre. He's like, shit, no one else can know. We're gonna burn you on Endor, Dad, I love you. Actually, son, I'm quite fine. We just gotta get off this Death Star. No, man, you're biting it. This secret dies with you.
Oh God.
So that's what I've been reading. It's God. It's so funny. It's and none of them can draw Chewbacca right. I mean, none of them can.
Right.
It's a treat. It really is. And Howard Chaykin on pencils. So weird to see this guy who's still drawing to this very day.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like, I think you sent me a picture and I was like, holy shit, this guy's literally been in comics Like, as long as, like, some of the really, like, the bigger greats. Like, I mean, John Romita Jr., I think, is probably one of the only other artists that I think is consistently doing work as much as Shaken is doing it. So that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What about you, James?
Okay, so for this week's podcast, I put together, like, a top 10 list because I don't want to just talk for the entire hour about what I read last week.
Right, so, right.
Let's see. Tokyo Ghost. What are you saying, James? Tokyo Ghost number 2 is a Rick Remender book, just started, I think, a couple weeks ago, but basically...
Yeah, it started last month.
Really, really...
Say, it's only on number 2, so...
Right, yeah.
Well, it's an Image book, so who knows when the release schedule is. You know, let's be honest.
Sandman Overture number 2, coming out next year.
Okay, shit, all right, never mind, adjust the number. It's been 0 weeks since Nick's mentioned Sandman Overture.
And you know what? I haven't read number 6 yet. It is sitting in my room, and I might never read it. I might never.
Anyways, so Tokyo Ghost number 2.
Yeah, just this really crazy kind of Blade Runner sci-fi vibe with a bunch of Japanese stuff thrown in there. The main two people is this lady and her, like, kind of boyfriend dude who they, like, she basically... He doesn't seem like he has any sort of intelligence, so she just kind of plugs him full of steroids, and he goes and beats the shit out of people sometimes.
Okay.
So that was really good. Tomorrow's number 3 was actually, like, really surprisingly good. Tomorrow's is kind of...
I've never heard of that book. Who publishes
that? That's a Dark Horse
book. I've plugged this a couple times, Mike.
Tomorrow's?
Yeah.
The Tomorrow's.
The Tomorrow's, yeah.
It's that really... It's a really weird Dark Horse series. It's about the one where people get punished or put in jail for, like, being creative. So if you, like, like, sculptures or shit like that, then they try to put you in jail.
This is not ringing a bell, but okay.
It's weird, and it's hard to explain, and every issue is different.
But yeah, in number 3, there's an app called Angry Gulls that kids play, and then they patched it or whatever this one day, and all the kids who played it murdered their families and then went and murdered everyone they saw that day.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of, like...
Dragons?
Yeah, so it's like a lot of subliminal messaging and people being controlled and stuff in the future, which is pretty cool. Wolf number 4 I read. Wolf? Mm-hmm. Wolf is good pretty much every time I pick that up.
Yeah, it's such a weird book, but, like, I'm really digging the supernatural stuff that Kot's doing in that book.
Oh yeah, and I mean the guy, Freddy Cthulhu face or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
obviously love that. Martian Manhunter number 5 I just read. Martian Manhunter, like, it takes a lot for me to pick up a big 2 book these days, and Martian Manhunter has really impressed me. Like, I don't know, I think Mr. Biscuits is such an amazing character that I just can't get enough. Like, I want a Mr. Biscuits spinoff is what I really want, but for now, I'll take the Martian Manhunter comic. Mm-hmm. Godzilla in Hell number 4 was pretty good. He ended up going against, like, King Ghidorah and another one of the really big ones. I like the third one better, but I mean... I'm going to keep buying that book as long as it's coming out, because just having a different team on it every week is, like, a totally mixed bag. So far, I've been really enjoying all of them so far.
I think that's a miniseries, so I don't... I mean...
Yeah, it's a 5-issue miniseries.
I was going to say, yeah.
I wish it would just go on forever, because I would read it forever, probably.
Yeah, right, James. Yeah. Count your blessings. When your poll gets out of control, you live and die by the miniseries,
that's
because
true.
The miniseries does the work for you, you know?
That's true.
Or if you love DC like me, DC does the work for you. They don't cancel my books. They curate my poll. That is what they're doing. They are curating my poll. They know what's best for me.
Good guy, DC.
But yeah, so for my picks, just to usher us along, because everyone apparently had a lot of things to read except for me this week. I read 5 books. I read Constantine the Hellblazer number 5, which I talked about on the last podcast. I was really excited to read, and I finally did read it. And Constantine is, it's been pretty great, and consistently is getting better. So, like, this book needs to never end because I love it too much. I read Ms. Marvel 19, which is just another build up to Secret Wars, and I'm like, how are they still writing books building up to Secret Wars when Secret Wars is like over halfway done? But it was a good book. It was kind of a, it was almost a tearjerker, like the way that the issue ended. And I think that's the end of that series before they relaunched the number one after Secret Wars. So that was fun. I read Transformers vs. G.I. Joe number 9. It was by far the most batshit insane issue yet, and I think that's saying something for this book. If you're not reading this book, God, try, really, please. It's so good. Jughead number 1, which is the follow-up, you know, that to Archie. Jughead number 1 was, I was really concerned that I wasn't going to like it because I really want to support this new wave of Archie in whatever ways that I can, and I was worried that I wasn't going to like Jughead number 1 because it's Chip Zdarsky, and I'm not a big fan of his humor, but I actually really like this issue, and the art was really, really good as well, so that's a fun book. If you can, I would suggest everyone go out and buy that book. Jughead, Archie, those books are just a lot of fun, a lot of clean, honest fun, which I think that we don't get enough of, like all good, clean, on all ages books are few and far between, and I think Jughead is a superb one, or superb issue. And then the last thing I read was The First Law of Mad Science, Science Club Mixtape, which is like, it's a Comixology submit book, I believe, and it's made by a bunch of indie creators, and it's basically, this book was an anthology, and I think I got it for free, or maybe I got it for really cheap at some point. I ended up backing the Kickstarter for their actual full-length graphic novel. And this is just an anthology about a series of stories that take place in this future world, probably like, I don't know, near future, whatever, probably like 50 years from now or something, where everyone has like eye implants and like there's like, I don't know, robots and like horrible future corporations and self-driving cars. And it's a really cool sci-fi series. And it wasn't what I expected it to be, which was, I expected it to be corny and not good. And in fact, that every single story in the book was actually very well written and very well put together. So whoever's editing those stories or that whole book is doing a fantastic job because they all had the potential to not be that good. And they ended up actually being really good sci-fi independent stories. But if you read it all in succession like I did, you actually could see the themes that cross between each of them and all the various like references to the same characters or same corporations or same like various sci-fi tech. So that was really cool. But whoo, man, that was a lot of comics. So let's pause for like a quick second, and when we come back we'll do our comic picks, and then we'll move into like today's actual big discussion about pull list management and stuff. So we'll be back in a quick second. So, James and Nick, what are you guys excited to read this week? I have my pick, and I know that you guys have your picks because we have notes for that kind of thing. James, what are you excited for this week?
I am excited for Island Number 4. So, for people who aren't familiar with that series, it's kind of an anthology format. I haven't recognized any of the creators so far, but obviously I'm not as old as you guys in the sphere. But,
Oof. Oh man, that's so cool that you're reading that. Like, I want to support that book, but I don't know if I don't know if I have the physical space in my house to buy it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Definitely. Yeah, it's a big issue, but and it takes a long time to come out. But so far, it's been rewarding me every time I picked it up. Some of the stories have been like every issue will continue, and some of them are more sporadic, but they're all very interesting, kind of philosophical ideas, I would say. And the art is always great too.
Yeah, it doesn't, I think Emma Rios, who did the art on Pretty Deadly, I think she manages it or edits it or something like that. I don't know if you know that
somebody
offhand.
Does, but their character in the book, Mike, is just like a little blob guy who's like, I'm the writer or whatever, narrator guy. So
like it gets like super meta about it?
Yeah.
Like they actually acknowledge the comic book?
Yeah, like at the first page and maybe the last page. The little blob guy's like, hey, I had to like round up all these creators, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, you would love that, you Alice Cop fanboy. I'm going to put myself in this book. Dear writer, on page 3, make sure you draw me.
He never did that. He's never, you know what, Nick, you don't have to be mean,
he
okay?
did, though.
Gosh.
Have you read
he
that?
He did that?
Have you read The Surface?
That's right.
I know, I know. But Island is good though. I know that everyone is, I should say people online, I think, have been like calling, especially other creators in comics have been calling this book out as like a thing that needed to happen.
Oh yeah.
And I know that, like, I'm actually surprised that I don't think Paul has ever talked about this, because I know Paul loves the idea of anthologies. He reads, you know, he reads 2000 AD and stuff, and I think this is probably in the same vein. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Probably. Yeah. So what keeps you reading this book every month?
I think it's the unique stories. Like, I'm trying to think of an actual story that I can talk about, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. The art is always very, very unique, and just because I get a taste of a lot of different things from this book, especially as someone who has a problem with an expansive pull list, having everything condensed into one issue is just like kind of a sampler for a bunch of new people, so I kind of have books to look out for.
That's awesome. Nick, what's your pick for this week?
This week, I will tell you, I have one book, but it was really, really close, so there will be a brief mention. It came down to Book of Death 4, the conclusion of that. I guess let's call it an event and not a miniseries. Book of Death 4, or Greg Rucka's Black Magic #1. With Nicola Scott on art, which that sounded really interesting to me. I've never actually read anything with Scott on art. I know she was on Earth 2 for a while, and I've seen some of her stuff, and it looks good. And of course, Greg Rucka for me is still, I mean, he's a pretty big name, but I still find him vastly underrated.
I totally agree. Not like a superstar writer by any means, but like, when you read his books, they're always fantastic, and he doesn't get as much recognition, I think, as he should.
Absolutely. I mean, he's not pumping out anywhere as much as, say, Wood or Vaughn or Fraction, when he puts something out, like, there's quality there, and it's consistent quality, and it's quality that doesn't tend to drop off. So I'm pumped for that, but I'm really interested to see how Book of Death 4 wraps things up and the implications for the Valiant universe following it. So it's been super interesting to watch this book go on for the past couple months, and I think they've said it's the biggest selling non-2 event in years, if possibly ever. So. Book of Death 4. We'll see how things wrap, and they've said at some point in this event some big character is gonna bite it, and unsurprisingly, going into issue 4, it hasn't happened yet. So it's gonna happen at the end of issue 4, and then we're gonna have to reflect on it and be sad. So who knows if it's Ninjak, there's gonna be trouble in River City. So
I see. Well, I look forward to hunting down variants for you at Midtown Comics this week.
Oh, man. Yeah. What about you, Mike? What do you got?
Sorry, I was going to go a little side note for the listeners. Every week I go to the comic shop, and if there's a Valiant book that's coming out, which is most weeks, I should say every week, there's usually a Valiant
book.
Every
week there's at least one, yeah.
Yeah, and so I always go to the shop, and I take a picture of the Valiant books and all their variant covers, and I go, Nick, do you want any of these? And then usually he spends 10 to 15 minutes deliberating, and I just am pacing the store,
outwardly,
like, come on, Nick.
Yeah.
And you know, and I've grabbed some for it. It's become a ritual at this point, where I go get my comics and I pick up the random ones off the shelf, and then I send a picture to Nick and I walk around a little while, and then yes or no, and then I get my comics, and it's fun. I have a couple comics from, I don't know. I just think it's just funny to me, because I don't know how else you'd get these variants, and I'm happy to do it, if only because I know how, like, strange variant covers are. But you know, for Book of Death, it's been a big deal. Like, there's some really killer variants for that series too.
Oh man, no, they got Cary Nord and Clayton Crane.
Yeah. Clayton Crane's covers have been astounding. I mean, that guy's art in general is fantastic, but
it really is like nothing else. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyways, my pick for this week is The Spire #4. This is Simon Spurrier's book that he's doing at Boom, which is a miniseries. It's an 8-issue miniseries, which takes place in this weird, unknown, strange world where there are people, like, basically, like, they're humans, but they only live in, like, tribes, and then there's this thing called the Spire, which houses, like, I think the vast majority of humans on this planet. Like, we don't know if it's Earth, we don't know if it's anything. I think there was some implication that this isn't Earth, and that there's, like, been terraforming, and it failed on this planet. And so our primary character, or I guess our protagonist, is this woman whose name escapes me, and she is this other, she's like a human, but she has, like, these other abilities where she can, like, make these little wispy things come out of her back and use them as, like, extremities, and, like, they can carry her and help her climb walls and shit, and it's really, really cool. And then there are these little, like, fairy troll people, and there's one guy in specific that, like, is part of the story. It's just the most bizarre book, but it's got Simon Spurrier's just mark all over it, with the little text inside of big text bubbles, and where he's like, someone's having, or someone's speaking, and then they're like saying a snide comment, but it's in tiny text. And I love the way this guy writes. He is probably one of the most creative writers in terms of just the way he style, like his voice for each of the characters. I don't know. I met him, he was signing at Forbidden Comics, and I met him, and I was like, you wrote the best X-Men, because this is the same guy that wrote X-Men Legacy, which is a series that came out, it's about 27 issues long. It's honest to God the best X-Men comic, I think, and is on the whole, it's like the best contained group of X-Men comics I've ever read, hands down. It has the absolute most perfect ending to a comic book I think I've ever read. Hands down. This guy, like, has sold me as a person who will follow him through thick and thin for anything that he's writing. And the Spire is weird, and it's like super out there sci-fi, kind of like Six Gun Gorilla was in a way. Same artist, another book too. That he did. Yeah, and
Jeff Stokely.
Yeah, Jeff Stokely. And so this book is just fantastic. I cannot recommend it enough. It might be hard to track down the earlier issues, so maybe you wait till people might want to wait till the trade. But this book is so good. It's awesome, weird, kind of. It's got like a I only want to say this because of it's popular, but it's got like a Mad Max feel, because there's a whole desert aspect to it, and these weird tribesmen people and like pseudo religions and shit. But it's a really fun book. Like I love this book. I look forward to it every single month. So that's my pick for this week. Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how you manage your pull list, because that's a big thing for comic book people, and for us, it's an even bigger deal. Nick and James and I all have very, very different ways of how we manage things and how we determine, you know, how we curate our lists. So we'll be back in a quick minute to talk about that. That the three of us are pretty avid comic book readers and have pretty decent sized pulls, as James kind of, you know, explained to us earlier in the episode. The thing that I guess always comes up in conversation, or we always kind of subtly imply, at least on this show and maybe, you know, to each other, is how we manage our pull lists, which, you know, if you're not familiar with what a pull list is, a lot of the times a comic book shop, if you go to your local comic book shop regularly, you can, you know, say, hey, I want you to pre-order this book, or I want to always get a copy of, say, Saga or Book of Death or whatever books are coming out. You can say, please pre-order this for me, and I want to make sure that every month when that issue or that comic book comes out, I get a copy of it. And that's a thing that works it to the benefit of both you and your comic book shop, to say they know to pre-order books in advance so that they get enough copies for not only you, but to put out on the shelves for people. And that also ensures that you, no matter what, get a copy of that comic. Now, from comic shop to comic shop, that may vary on whether you actually get that comic. Sometimes, you know, shops will under-order, or there will be an issue with delivery, or sometimes your comic shop will just straight up forget about, you know, your comic. But I think those situations are very few and far between. And 95% of the time, if you pre-order a book or you put it on your pull list at the shop, in quotes there, if you put it on your, quote, pull list, you'll get a copy of that book. And that's just a way for your comic shop to keep track of what books you're pulling. And then they can determine, you know, how many books they want to pull on top of that. Say, you know, if 50 people want a copy of Ms. Marvel on their pull list, then they say, well, we should probably order an extra 25 to put out on the shelves, because we see that this is a popular book. So it's a whole thing to deal with the economics of comics in a way. But for us as comic book readers, we also, you know, have to keep a copy for ourselves to know what books we're following, especially when you're someone like me or Nick or James, when you're reading upwards of 50 to 80 comic books a month, depending on, you know, who you are. So what we wanted to talk about today was how we manage those pull lists ourselves. I know that, like, that there's, you know, your comic shop manages it for you, but also, like, how do you, you know, decide what books you want to keep, what books you want to drop? So, James and Nick, I really wanted to hear what you guys do, because I think between the two of you, I've probably talked to you a little bit about this, but, you know, let's actually flesh it all out. Let's actually discuss this. So, what do you guys do to manage your pull list and, you know, pick things and drop things and stuff like that?
Well, for me, talking about my literal pull list, like my subscription list, that's generally mm-hmm. just books that I've gotten a couple issues in and I feel are really solid. I don't want to miss any of them in the future. I'll put those on the pull list. But like my ritual for going to a comic shop, I guess you might say,
yeah,
is I go in, I pick up my books that they have pulled for me already, so I have an idea of what I'm looking at.
You already know what the financial burden's going to be.
Yeah. And then from there, I'll kind of... At least where I go, they have a shelf in the back that just has all the new books for the week. And I go pretty much every week. So then I just go, I glance through all those and add those onto the stack. So, I mean, pretty much almost any number one that has a tentacle monster on it, I will pick up.
Right, right.
Because I'm big into the Cthulhu stuff. But other than that, it's mostly, I would say, publisher-based. Like deciding because
right.
I'm a really big fan of Image, Dark Horse, and Black Mask right now. So almost mm-hmm. any book they put out, especially if there's a creator on it that I'm familiar with, I'm probably going to pick up that number one, at least just the number one, just kind of get a taste for it.
Gotcha. So do you do all of your, I guess, like your pull list management just through your local comic shop? Like, do you keep a copy of what you're pulling yourself?
Yeah, I do. I use Evernote heavily, and I kind of update it.
Okay.
Every week, I kind of just go through. Image is actually really good for this now. If you go to their website, you can go through and see each week's projected, anyway, what the releases will be for that week. So I have it planned out all the way through the rest of the year what comics I'm definitely buying.
Oh, nice. So you've got it set up so that you know what issues are going to be available, like months and months available.
Yeah, yeah.
Or months and months in the future, I should say.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually the second week of every month that really breaks the bank for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, is that just because like Image has like a shitload of books that are releasing?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So so how do you manage things through Evernote then? I mean, I realize this is getting to like the super minutia of how these things are done, but like, you know, if you're keeping track of these things, like do you I only ask because I have a lot of like data projections in heavy quotes there where I, you know, I guess I could even explain my pull list system I guess while we're talking about it. I think Nick had to walk off for a moment, so he'll be back. But yeah, so like my pull list is managed in two ways. Like I have my mm-hmm. global, quote unquote, global pull list that I manage myself to say, here are all the books that I'm buying mm-hmm. through Comixology, and here's what I'm picking up at Midtown Comics, because that's where I get my regular or physical pulls from. And so my spreadsheet I have on Google spreadsheets that I actually have publicly available, so I'll post that in the show notes just so people can see it, where I keep track of what publishers are coming out, and I don't actually keep track of what's coming out every month. I just have a list of here are the series that I'm reading, here's how much they cost, mm-hmm. here's if I get it, you know, here's a column for if it's digital or physical, if it's a limited series or not, and then I even have it set up so that I can determine, okay, this book isn't out yet, but I want to pull it anyways. So don't include it in my data analysis to determine how much I'm spending a month. Instead, just put it on the list so that I know that it's coming out and I can remember to either subscribe to it digitally on Comixology or to subscribe to it at Midtown Comics on their website. So I'm in a unique situation where I'm pulling both digital and physical books regularly. Mm-hmm. So I have to like manage myself in like three different places because I'm also managing all of my books secondary, like in a secondary place on Comixology's pull list site, where I have all the books that I'm pulling, so I can get an email every week that says, hey, Mike, here are your books that are coming out tomorrow. And it doesn't distinguish whether or not they're digital or physical. It just says, here are the books that you're subscribed to. Plan on buying them, I guess. And that's nice just because then I can say, oh, well, I was planning on getting, you know, Miss Marvel, but it turns out that it was delayed a week, and now I get an email saying, hey, this, you know, here's the books that are coming out. And if I thought Miss Marvel was coming out, I'll actually know a day in advance if it's actually coming out. So it's, for me, it's kind of all over the place. And that's, I mean, I just like the data side of it to determine, okay, here's how much I need to budget this month. And then tack on an extra like $50 or something like that for like random number ones, or if I'm going to buy a random graphic novel or just something off the shelf that I maybe missed. So I mean, that's usually how I do things, and that seems to work for me. And plus then I have nice little graphs that show, here's how many Marvel books I'm buying, here's how many DC and Image books I'm buying, because I have it broken down by publisher as well. So I'm a huge nerd about it, I guess. What about you, Nick? How are you managing your pull list, I guess, whether that's at your shop or personally?
It's sort of like a multi-tiered approach, I guess you could say.
Okay.
The first thing, of course, is I have everything put into Comixology pull list, and that system is not always perfect. It does miss things on occasion, or it mislabels a book, or things get weird, and next thing you know, you're staring down an extra book that you didn't think you were supposed to be getting, or you're being shorted one. And so it's a good starting point, but it's a system that needs sort of a cross-check or a reinforcement to make certain that you're good to go. And so what I always do is, every week I check my Comixology pull list, then I go one step further, and I, closer to the edge, I'm about to break, everything is a Linkin Park lyric, and, sorry, and, no, then I go through the, tab for Comixology for quote-unquote this week, and I just go through all the pages, and it might takes... Yeah, it takes about 5 minutes, and it's worthwhile because usually I end up finding one or two things that I've missed, either because I usually don't subscribe for my one-shots, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to go click subscribe on go hunt down a one-shot and subscribe it, so things like that get missed, or usually I don't want to, or I forget to subscribe to the trades I'm getting, so going through the This Week tab really allows me to catch those one or two things that fall through the cracks.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
In addition, I also I email in my pull list. I email in my my new things I want to subscribe to every month. And so usually what I do is I also pull up the email I sent in for that month. So I have a small list of the three or four things that I need to be looking for that should be coming out that month.
Gotcha.
So I usually cross-check it against that as well.
So your local comic shop also manages like a copy of your pull list to an extent.
Right. They manage a copy, but I'm not actually accessing the list that they keep. I'm merely accessing the email that I sent in, you know, 2 months before for the previews catalog.
Oh, gotcha. You know? Okay.
So like I'll be looking in October, I'll be looking at the email I sent in August. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, okay, in August I said I wanted to get these things, and okay, so this one I already got, this one I already got, this one actually comes out this week. And between all of that, it makes for a pretty airtight system. It's not the most efficient system, but it really says, more or less, Comixology system works, mostly. Let's just have a couple cross-checks, so that when I forget about my annual and my one shot and a trade, and next thing you know, there's an extra $15 or something, that's not completely catching me off guard.
Right.
So I find that works really, really well.
Yeah. And to go back to your point, you said, so I actually don't use the previews catalog anymore. I used to when I was living in Michigan, and you know, the shop that I went to like heavily used the previews catalog, and now I'm in the lucky position where I can just kind of pull something, and like Midtown, it buys enough copies that I can just deal with it. But
we know, Mike.
I know. And I'm not trying to necessarily brag about it, but I mean, it's convenient. Happening. But yeah. And so James and Nick, I guess, do you guys check the previews catalogs? I mean, because I check the catalogs when they come out, and I say, okay, this looks interesting. This looks interesting, and it gives me like a heads up to say, okay, these books are coming out. Remember that when they're like the month before, or even 2 months before, if I can subscribe to them on Comixology or on at Midtown, I should do so as soon as possible. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, Comixology and even Midtown's website, they don't have those comics available immediately.
Right.
So I can't necessarily subscribe to them on the, you know, when the previews catalog is out. And usually for Comixology, you know, it's the week of, I say, okay, buy this week's issue and then turn on the subscription to keep buying the ongoing issues, which is very cool to be able to manage things like that. But for you guys, it seems like if you're buying primarily all physical, like you have to be a little bit more aware. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. Yeah, and previews really is sort of a double-edged sword because it takes you from maybe being someone who's semi-informed about what's coming out, and it makes you 100% absolutely informed. And as I said, that's right. Really a double-edged sword because if you really aren't looking to increase the size of your pull, I mean, and this is a tactic that my friend Jordan uses all the time. Like, if he knows his pull is getting a little bit out of control, he won't even touch the previews catalog for whatever month it is. Like, it doesn't even matter. He won't even pick it up.
Just don't even give himself the chance to potentially buy another series.
Yeah, absolutely. He won't even pick it up for that month. And unfortunately, I normally embrace that idea. It's just that occasionally... it's more of a concern of like one or two trades falling through the cracks or, for example, there are times when I might not otherwise pick up the previews catalog except for the fact that, you know, I need to figure out when, you know, Ghosted 4 is going to roll around the corner or something like that. And, well, Ghosted is a bad example because Ghosted I can still probably end up getting out of Barnes & Noble at some point. But if we're talking about like some really more obscure trade series that I pick up, then in that case you really need to be ordering it out of previews because otherwise you're going to be hunting it down in some other fashion. But yeah, that is really the danger with previews, is that it gives you everything and then more or less dares you to not walk away with, you know, at least four or five things. And so that's why it's, you know, just so freaking important to just be informed.
Would you say that like is beneficial, I guess, and it seems kind of like a leading question there, but would you say that like makes it easier to like trim your pull list at the same in the same way as you would like make it grow?
I would definitely say that it makes it actually a lot tougher to trim your pull.
Okay.
Because of course now you're literally seeing everything, and even I would say even if you are a fairly avid you know, aficionado of comics that spends a lot of time on comic book websites and Bleeding Cool, Newsarama, comic book resources, et cetera, mm-hmm. Even if you're that person, you are still not going to be anywhere as much in the know as, well, or at least you're not going to be as informed about everything coming out as you would with the previous catalog. And so it makes things a lot tougher. It sort of forces you frequently to reevaluate your pull list. And I guess in that sense, maybe it does sort of help you trim your pull list because you're like, well, okay, this book is coming up next month. This book is coming up next month. Now I have to weigh that against my actual pull. Mm-hmm. Because people forget, you know, you just keep adding books all the time and you don't stop to think about the fact that your pull is becoming this, you know, insurmountable behemoth to get through.
Yeah, James, how you doing with that?
Yeah.
Well, luckily, I can speed read and I get through my backlog in a day, so.
Okay, so it's not a monetary issue then, right?
I was going to say, it's like, James, we're not talking about the inability to and read through everything. It's being able to put down all the money on the counter, I guess. Mm-hmm. Especially if you read, like, Image, especially if you read publishers that don't publish on a monthly schedule, it can give you a really false idea of how big or how, quote unquote, how out of control your pull has gotten. Because sometimes you'll have three or four Image books that they all decide to come back from hiatus all at the same time. And all of a sudden you're like, well, where the fuck did these come from? And that's why you really have to be looking at all of your pull all the time and not just looking at your week to week and saying, well, you know, last week I had five books and this week I've got four books or whatever, so things are fine. You really have to keep an eye on everything because you'll have stuff that'll drop off the radar for 3 or 4 months at a time. I mean, maybe if you read Big Two only, you have a much better idea on a more frequent basis of what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. Previews is tricky, and sometimes it's better to just avoid the catalog.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I have pretty much never read a previews book, and obviously my pull list is way too big. So I pretty much just go off of the websites. Image, obviously, I think has the nicest website as far as being easy to track week to week.
Totally.
Dark Horse also is pretty easy, but then like going into like Avatar and Black Mask, that's pretty much like a total mystery for me. Right. So I just have to keep an eye out. Like pretty much once it hits the shelf, that's when I have an opportunity to actually look at the book.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's the advantage, I guess, of, you know, using previews in some ways. Mm-hmm. And if you're not using previews, listeners, I mean, you really should. It's super helpful just to like kind of gauge where things are coming out, when they're coming out, and to even just get a look at number ones that you may have missed from publishers that you probably aren't following. That was always one of the best things about the previews order form or previews book when I was getting it regularly, was that you could just go through and you could say, oh, I've never heard of, like, Radical Publishing was a company that was around for a couple years, and I'd never really heard of them outside of, actually, I should say, I'd never really heard of them, and I saw that they had, like, a featured book that was called The Last Days of American Crime, and it was by these creators, Greg Tocchini and Rick Remender, who I'd never heard of before, and I was like, oh, this book looks interesting, and it was a cool fucking book. Like, it was this huge, like, 60-page long thing, and it was 3 issues long, and it was such a cool book. And had I not been reading the previews, I probably would have never seen that book. And for those of you, you know, who are reading low, I mean, Greg Tocchini and Rick Remender, that's that same team. And like, if you want to get some really cool stuff that they did before they were, I guess, like, quote unquote, bigger names in comics, I mean, Last Days of American Crime is a killer book. And I don't know where you can buy it. I think Image might have reprinted it recently. But like, that was a creator-owned book that they did for this little publisher called Radical that is now gone. So I mean, previews has its advantages, but again, like Nick said, you know, it's, you see all these books and you want to buy everything that's in there that looks cool to you. So it's a little bit of a problem, yeah. I guess.
Well, I mean, sort of. I was thinking about this just now. The flip side of that is, if you've at least looked through the previews when you go into the store and you're looking at the store shelves and you're seeing all these books and you're like, well, this is new and I don't remember that and that looks really exciting, you can also sort of steel yourself and say, look, you know what came out this month, you looked through the previews, you have seen all of these things already, you might not remember them but you saw them already, and yeah, you already decided you weren't going to pick it up. And you probably picked something else in its place that you're already getting in your pull. So in a way, previews does help you try to curb impulse buys, really.
Right.
By
right.
saying, you know, you already saw all this stuff. This isn't new. And you picked something else in its place for the most part. So it's not like you're like, well, I'm going to get this and I'm going to get this. And yeah. And so in a way, it does help curb impulse buys to a certain extent, I would say.
Since we've been talking about pulls and our pull lists and all this stuff, Nick actually found a discussion topic on the comic book subreddit on Reddit asking, what is your least favorite pull and why are you still pulling it? Which I think is probably the most interesting question I've seen in a while. And it's totally something that I think everyone that has a pull list, or especially a large pull list, thinks about, you know, where you have a book that you're reading and you're like pulling it because you kind of like it, but you really can't figure out why you like it. And I think, but you know, in the pre-show we talked about this, we all have something like that at least to some extent. So, you know, Nick and James, what is your book or books that you're pulling that just you're not sure why you're still pulling them?
Yeah. No, it's a great question, and I'm not just saying that because I'm the one who read it first and it resonated with me and I decided to bring it to the podcast and we decided as a forum that we were going to address it. Yeah, there's probably two books. Probably my least favorite book that I'm still pulling Manifest Destiny I'm still getting for like another month, but I technically cut that already. So that was okay. That was kind of drifting, and it was just taking way too many weird breaks too. Like, I don't know why this is happening recently, and I think it's because people that are doing Image are also largely juggling Big Two stuff so much to a point that we're like, I'm staring down a whole bunch of Image books where you rarely ever see two issues in a row anymore.
Oh, wow.
Month to month, you know? And so Manifest Destiny was taking a lot of breaks. I think it probably took 5 or 6 months off in the last year. Don't quote me on that. But for me, Birthright has just really been kind of drifting for the last 4 or 5 months. And it really can't decide if it wants to be a book that's going to really dwell in our world or this other fantasy world. I think it's called Terranos. And it just keeps bouncing back and forth with every single issue. And it just isn't really going anywhere. And it doesn't help that the main character has become kind of unlikable. Because you find out at the end of the first issue that, minor spoilers, he's actually being possessed by this like evil bad guy that he claims he killed.
Right.
And this thing that keeps possessing him keeps doing like evil shit like all the time. And it's like, this is getting kind of annoying, and it hurts because so much of Williamson's other stuff from Nailbiter to Ghosted, I really, really have enjoyed. But Birthright is kind of getting a little, I don't know. It's tough to put up with a consistently unlikable main character, even if it's not their fault. It's not your fault, main protagonist. And then just it's Robin Williams giving him a hug and Matt Damon crying. And beyond that, and this is me being like 17-year-old, I listen to Simple Plan and I'm gonna be edgy as fuck and say something that's gonna piss people off. But really, Southern Bastards recently has just, the last 4 or 5 months, it has just been a test of patience over
really?
And over and over and over again. It's just, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but at the end of the first arc, this book, it basically teased the idea that the main character's daughter, who, again, minor spoilers, if you aren't reading Southern Bastards and you've considered it, just skip over this part, or as I've always said before, just stop the podcast. You're pretty far in at this point. I mean, you've already Damn listened it. To over an hour. I mean, there's not yeah. much left. It's not to say I'm not going to make good points. I am. Trust me. I know. I'm me. But
oh, my gosh. Get on just, with it, Nick. Get on with
just
it.
Just false bravado aside, all joking aside, I do have a fairly dim notion of my self-esteem. Southern Bastards basically teased the idea that the main character who dies at the end of the first arc, oh man, so shocking, it's a great read, first arc, mm-hmm. amazing, that his daughter, who's coming back from being in Afghanistan or Iraq, is actually going to come back to this small southern town and set things right, and you're just expecting like this, you know, southern justice narrative, and mm-hmm. ever since then, a whole nother arc went by. Arc 2 was a prequel arc about the bad guy, and it was interesting. It was good. As far as prequel arcs go, it was amazing. But now we're in this third arc, and it's this weird series of vignettes about these small bit part characters within the town. And all I can think of at the end of every issue is, this issue was good, but where the hell is, like, the revenge narrative? I mean, my goodness. Right. Like, that was, like, a year ago. Maybe that was a year and a half ago. And I don't know when we're gonna get this story about this this guy's daughter coming back and maybe, you know, distributing justice in equal parts. So why am I still pulling it? Simple answer. I'm still waiting for that to happen. And the idea that I think it's going to be really awesome and be, you know, a huge ass kicking is what's keeping me around. So I guess good job, Jason A and Jason B, or I should say Jason A and L. Jason L, because I'm still reading, even though you hooked me in a year and a half ago and still haven't given me that. So congratulations.
Gotcha. well, What about you, James? What are you reading that you're not sure why you're still pulling?
Let's see. Probably the top of the list has got to be They're Not Like Us.
Oh man.
Now it's a fight. Now it's a fight.
He's going to fight you now.
We're going to fight now. But I just... I feel like I must have missed a couple issues in the previous arc or something. I just feel like I don't really understand.
You mean like literally or like metaphorically?
Literally, I could have not read those issues, but
What you're saying. I get what you're saying, James. I have been reading, and I have that same feeling. Mm-hmm. But continue.
Just arc to arc feels like a very very different book, almost like. What I signed up for in the first five issues is not really what I'm reading anymore, which is fine, but I kind of wanted them to kind of get back and, like, the voice, I think was his name, I kind of wanted him to come back, or maybe it just seems like they don't...
Oh, and I think he will.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it seems like the group used to have a purpose, and now they're just kind of, like, dicking around, and I don't know. I don't really know what they're doing anymore. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think
this book had a really tough job transitioning from arc one to arc two.
That I would definitely agree with.
I think it had a lot on its plate.
Yeah.
And yeah, before they had an agenda. Let's not forget that agenda was stealing stuff and making money and killing the immediate family members of the people in this group, but and this is not to get on too much of a soapbox or a tangent about this book, but it is sort of a dilemma that we face a lot when we're dealing with why are you still pulling books or how do you keep pulling books is, you know, what happens when you go from arc A to arc B and how do they transition and how do you decide what to do with it? And I think that book is in a tough spot because, yeah, the voice was the character driving everything, even if those actions weren't exactly positive. And so now we're just sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that really just hits on that whole topic of how do you handle books that are much more of a slow burn? And how do you determine when they're either on the back burner simmering or just the burner's off, if we want to continue that analogy, metaphor, simile, comparison, whichever one is correct. Maybe like two of those are. Don't ignore the fact I have a degree in English and I can't remember, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, to your point, James, I think like, yeah, there's definitely been like a lull. Like the last three issues have been just slow. And they've been doing a lot of like character development, but like to what end? You know, it almost feels like what's the point of doing all this development because there seems to be no direction.
Yeah, and I think my other example would be We Stand on Guard, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, we are just going to fucking go at it. Well, Jesus.
Yeah. Although I did like the last one. It's Brian K. Vaughan, Americans versus Canadians, which sounds great, but there's not really that much action in the book, I feel. Like, it's about a war, but there's not really a lot of fighting going on.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the sort of war that's being fought, but...
Fair, yeah.
Because the Canadians aren't in any position to really want to go toe-to-toe with the Americans.
And I guess when I signed up for it, I thought that was what it was going to be, but it seems like it's pretty much the Canadians hiding and the Americans sending robots at them.
Maybe that's like supposed to be the point,
yeah,
man.
I guess.
Like, America's doing that right now. The country's overseas, bro.
Uh-oh.
Open your eyes, sheeple.
Wow, that's not real.
So, okay, well, let me list...
Well, I mean, that's
two.
Another good point, you know, when something turns into something you feel like it wasn't pitched as.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's... I mean, in my two books I'll pick, that I had like four or five that I was like, why am I reading these? But the two that I
just
I would got, definitely...
kept getting bigger. Next thing I know, Mike's got like half of his pull. He's like, guys, why am I reading all of these?
We brought this topic up in the pre-show, and then I started to just like reconsider my entire pull list. Like I was like a comic book existential breakdown. No, the two books that I had, one was They're Not Like Us for pretty much the exact same reasons that James said.
Okay.
And that's simply because, like, I feel like the book is slower, but I have faith in Stevenson because, I don't know, like, part of me is, like you said, Nick, waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I'm still pulling it, but I also am wondering, is this really worth it?
Yeah.
I don't know. So whatever, we've already talked about that. The other book that I'll say is The Tithe, and I've mentioned this book before on another episode about how I feel kind of like uncomfortable with the story, and I feel like the you know, the creator, Matt Hawkins, I think we decided his name was.
Right, we accidentally thought he was Hollingsworth at one point.
Yeah, we said Hollingsworth, who's a colorist.
Who's a wonderful colorist and not the writer of The Tithe, yes.
Yeah. And the themes of this book are kind of interesting, and like it's very just like socially angry about a lot of things. And I think Hawkins does a good job of balancing the like atheist point of view that he definitely holds and admitted in issue one that he is a hardcore atheist, as well as the religious belief. Like, because the opposite character of the hardcore atheist is this deeply religious Baptist man. And I think he does a good job of arguing both sides. But I still feel like the overarching story, outside of the personal conflicts that some of the characters may have, are really on the nose and kind of... they seem offensive to me, but at the same time, they're not, because they're, I don't know, they're dramatic stories. Like, we can't have a good story without there being some element of drama or, you know, conflict. So he introduces these things, and to me, I'm like, it's just so on the nose socially that I'm like, maybe you're kind of treading into offensive territory.
Maybe it's more of a polemic.
Yeah, and so I'm still reading it because I'm still curious, but it's on the verge. Like, every month I read an issue and I go, I don't know how I felt about that. It wasn't a bad story, but it wasn't a great story. And I think that's pretty much a lot of what I think of, you know, when we as comic book readers, you know, we balance comics and we say, I don't know if I like this or if I want to drop it or not, because we're not sure if the story is appealing to us anymore. Whether or not the story started as one thing and changed to another, sometimes you're reading a book and you go, this is what I signed up for, but I guess I don't like it as much as I thought I did. Or maybe the number one hooked you really well, or hooked you really hard, and then four or five issues later you go, maybe this isn't as cool of a concept or as interesting of a story as I thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? Would you guys say that that's true to some extent?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are tons of times where it sort of just turns into a waiting game, and it can be problematic. I mean, just ask Jordan, who sat on 10 issues. I can't bring this up enough because it's just insane to me.
I know.
Sat on 12 issues of Justice League United. Honestly, like, this is what he does. It's so weird. He'll, like, stockpile 6 or 7 issues of a book, and then he'll read them all, like, in single issue. Like, he literally could be buying trades.
I'm doing that with Imperium.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I don't approve of that either. And, and he literally, now that I think about it, this is like a mind explosion. Jordan literally could be reading trades because that is his reading behavior. But but he buys singles and then reads them like trades. My goodness. Nice. But yeah, it's a weird waiting game situation, and a lot of times what helps is the more you read comics, the more you have an idea for what writers are worth sticking it out with, and what writers, if they're flaming, what writers tend to flame out early, or the concept tends to get diluted or end up burning out by the end of the first arc. Brian K. Vaughan, Matt Fraction, and sorry. And just ask Jordan about Matt Fraction sometime. He will get on a soapbox and tell you all about Matt Fraction being the wunderkind of the one arc, first arc, you know, and just flaming out. And of course, like I said, just
Jordan's making a lot of enemies from this podcast right now.
Oh, he is just, yeah, my goodness. I often tell him we ought to have him on if Xander's willing to do a lot of editing work. through all of the things that have to be scrapped, or you know, where he just, you know, spits a little too much fire, as they say in the industry. The industry being hip hop music. We're gonna make a circle here, but I will get there. It's eventually you have to cut stuff, and it seems tough, but there's something really gratifying when you finally reach that point where you actually, like, cut a book and you're like, you know what, you know, I'm cutting this book, but I'm going to start something else. And if I hear later that it's good, maybe I'll transition it over to trade. And I think that's one of the problems with single issues, is that if you're reading it in trade and you finish a trade and you're like, well, that was kind of not great, you can wait and sort of hear what people say as the single issues come out for the next trade, and then just make maybe a slightly more informed decision. So I do think that is one of the pros about trades, whereas with singles, You can play the waiting game, but you might, you know, lose, quote unquote, lose $20 or $30 in the process if you don't know when to call it.
Yeah, James, do you ever find yourself in that situation where, I mean, like you said, you've got a really big pull, and I can't stop addressing it enough, like where you're reading a book and you just kind of drop it, or maybe you think this would be better as like a trade, or you wish you would have trade waited or something like that. I guess, do you run into any situations like that?
Yeah, I do. Cutting things from my pull list is almost like a new thing to me, because before it was like completely out of control. Like, I would walk into the shop and buy anything that I see on the shelf, which obviously is financially responsible.
But yeah,
I have started transitioning to trade, and like, really for me, it's more about the comics that are really, really good than the ones that are bad. Like, if I can tell at the end of an issue, when I like run to my girlfriend and she doesn't read comic books, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting, I have to tell you about this story that I just read. She's like, okay, James. Yeah. Those are the ones that belong on the pull list. It's the ones that are just kind of like, well,
the ones that have you pestering her, because this sounds like a bad setup here.
No.
There are...
Why can't James read shit books?
So it's the ones that I maybe picked up a random number one, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good, it could go somewhere. But generally, I'm not excited to read it when I actually pull the issue. Those are the ones that I'll typically like try to get through the library or a trade, maybe, if I think it's something that my friends would be interested in or something. I don't know.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I've found frequently that when I see myself banking up two or three issues of a book, I used to think that that was sort of like a sign that I really was like, oh man, I need to read a couple back-to-back and it'll be so good. But these days, like when I find myself banking up two issues of a book, I really start evaluating why I'm not reading it every month.
Right.
Like, why is it not that engaging? And I find when I bank up three issues of a book these days, that's almost certainly a clue that it falls into my potential cut list. You know, I'm always thinking in
Absolutely.
The back of my head. I've always got like at least sort of a short list of three books that are on the fence, and so that when previews comes along or something like that, I've always got these three or four books where I'm like, okay, which one is it? So it's just this weird constant ranking system, and it just gets tougher the more you get into comics, because as I've said before, the more you trim things, I mean, eventually you're not cutting bad books from your pull anymore. You're cutting good books, and you're preserving the excellent ones. And yeah, that's tough.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Big Gigantic, Grammatic, Vanilla, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep current with the I Read Comic Books podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, we'd love it if you'd take a quick moment to rate us. If you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Also, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter @destroythecyb, and follow us on Tumblr @destroythecyborg.tumblr.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
Like, a lot of the series that I'm reading are, like, I'm reading too many indie comics. That's the problem. And, like, all of them are on hiatus. Or
that's a problem.
They've
yeah.
ended, and Comixology hasn't pushed them into my inactive subscription thing. So I'm like, are they over? Are they done? Are they coming back? And I haven't heard any news about that. So like, I don't know why they haven't been pushed over there yet.
Yeah, that's an. I don't actually know how that works.
So there's that, and they make no. They make no distinction between inactive and discontinued subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
it can be really hard to figure out if your book is actually done.
Well, yeah, and inactive versus discontinued, I would think, would be determined based upon what I've done to the series, like whether I've like unsubscribed, quote unquote, from the series, or whether a series is done, like they're like it's over and they're not making anymore. But inactive subscription seems to contain both series that I've stopped pulling and series that I was pulling that are now over. But inactive means that they might come back, like they're not officially over, whereas discontinued is like they're actually done. So like half of the stuff that I'm pulling could be like in one of these categories, but they haven't decided to put it there yet.
Hold on. So looking at subscriptions, active subscriptions versus inactive and discontinued. So inactive are the ones that you chose to stop subscribing to.
That's false, because there is a discontinued subscription thing within that category, like of discontinued subscription that I stopped pulling. So like, hold on. I don't know.
Wait, but the thing is, if you chose to unsubscribe from it at any point, it becomes inactive.
Correct.
Discontinued means that it ended on its own.
Okay. So Elektra, I stopped pulling that before it ended. I really liked that series because of Mike Del Mundo's art. I stopped pulling it because the series was like poorly written. I stopped pulling it before it was over, but it's still in discontinued. So really that, Batman.
Because it ended of its own volition.
But after I stopped pulling it.
Right, so it would move, because the inactive means that you could potentially go back and resubscribe to the book.
So Constantine, right, that series that was shitty, that's an inactive subscriptions, but that series ended. So I can go back
that
and
series ended, but DC did not mark it as inactive, or marked it as discontinued on Comixology.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that it's not my fault. I'm saying it's someone else's to blame.
We could have reached that point
whatever a while whatever ago. The fuck you want to say, that's fine. Sure. Yeah,
no, because I will take no responsibility for any of this.
It's fine. It's fine. Just fine. It's fine.
I'm not comic fine. Books. Come on, Mike.
It's fine.
Mike,
it's
you're
fine.
Comic books.
It's fine. It's fine. I said it's fine, all right? It's fine. God.
But like Supreme Blue Rose. What's going on with
Supreme
that?
Supreme Blue Rose.
That should be inactive.
It's over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That should be inactive or discontinued.
So should Nightcrawler, and I still have it as an active subscription.
Yeah. Same.
So this is not. So what I'm saying is, like, the discontinued and inactive things are accurate. It's the content on the site that is wrong.
Right, exactly. But I'm saying either way, I've got
here.
All this shit that might come up in my pull again, and I'm not going to, like, get new series if they're just going to drop, like, you know, a $50 pull on me one day. Because all of these books tend to line up.
Right.
So
if you know that they're done, then just stop subscribing to them then.
Yeah, stop hitting yourself, Sander.
If Supreme Blue Rose comes back, Mike.
It's not coming back.
You don't know that.
Warren Ellis isn't the sort to revisit shit like that.
This is true. He like once it's done, he's like, what was that thing that I made?
He just hops in his car and rips off the rearview mirror because he's never looking back.
Never looking back. So, yeah, but because of this, I haven't really added. I think the last thing I added to my pull.
I'm not pulling that out of nowhere. Some NBA player bought a new car and ripped off his rearview mirror because he felt it didn't agree with his personal philosophy.
Oh,
that
yeah,
he never
I heard
looked
that,
back.
Because he never wanted to look
over
back. Because
that's illegal.
No, it's not illegal.
Well, I
it's
mean.
Illegal to, it's illegal to drive without a rearview mirror.
It's got
to no,
be.
It's not, because I did it for a year.
No, that just means you were
over
caught.
That just means you were doing caught. Something illegal. That's all that means.
Yeah. It's not, it's
Mike,
not illegal
Mike Rappin,
caught, right? Dude,
self-incriminating you know misdemeanors you know on our podcast since 2015.
Look that shit up in,
book
in,
Dano.
In the Michigan, like, law books or something.
Michigan-like law books. Those are the words you'll need to use before the judge. Why don't you look these up in your Michigan law books, Your Honor?
You guys don't have to be. Hey, you know what? Fuck you guys, because I am correct. You do not have to have a rear view mirror as long as you have two side view mirrors. That is the law.
I am the law.
The side mirror, so I'm fine.
I am the law.
If you're missing a side mirror, you can get pulled over.
It's the right one, though. I thought you just needed the left one.
Oh, you can as long as you don't go on a highway.
Is that the rule?
Well, I do that too.
That is in the Michigan law book. Yes.
There's only one.
I'm actually telling the fucking truth. You guys are being shit faces.
Why don't you come back to the state and drive the car here, and we'll see who's Shit face.
Yeah, who's shit face then?
We will see who is the shittiest of the faces.
Oh no, so it turns out you need the rear view mirror and the driver's side mirror. Passenger side mirror is optional.
This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. We primarily discuss traffic law on this podcast and
in Michigan specifically though.
Yeah. Mike Rappin can never come back to this state now, you realize that.
Yeah, you've incriminated yourself.
No country for old Rappin.